Andy Tupaia is the kaiwhaka haere for the Eastern Women's Refuge. And as our country's new anti-stalking law comes into force, advocates are saying its promise will depend on how effectively it's implemented in practice, ensuring it delivers real protection rather than remaining more than just paper. Thank you for joining us on Wātea. Ko Dale tēnei, Annie. Mihi ana kia koe te tuhine, kia ora rā wātū koe. Thank you for your time. Tēnā koe, Annie.
Kia ora, Dale. Yeah, thank you for having me this morning. Hopefully I can clarify from our point of view how we think this will work for us.
Thank you. Well, firstly, many of the women who are in refuge and seeking support at very difficult times actually experience this stalking, which we as a nation are trying to address from your frontline experience. What practical role can organisations like the Eastern Women's Refuge play in helping ensure the new law is applied consistently and meaningfully for victim survivors? Perhaps you could start off by just telling us how prevalent stalking is with the wahine that you work with, Annie.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, from a frontline perspective, for us, stalking's been around for a long time. This is nothing new to us. The law's only come out today, but the legislation has only been new today. But stalking's been around for us for a long, long, long time. So it's nothing new. When women come in to be assessed, it's very likely that when we do a risk assessment that they would have had stalking happen to them during their time in the relationship, but also that stalking could still happen as well, which means that we've got to adjust safety plans to, after we've done that risk assessment, our safety plans will cover how we're going to keep them safe when someone is obsessively and repeatedly still trying to track them.
And of course it's compounded now with the nature of cell phones and waiapūkoro in everyone's pockets. So stalking perhaps used to take a different form, but even so, how unnerving is it for these wahine to be stalked digitally? And I'm sure some are being stalked physically as well, but what might you say about the digital role in stalking behaviour?
Yeah, gosh, and to be fair, technology is changing every single day. So we, as a frontline service, we've got to be on to technology to understand what are the different ways that people can stalk someone, particularly online. And just to be fair, to be clear that, yes, you're right, that stalking can happen a lot in online, in the digital space kind of thing, but also, as you've alluded to, that physically as well, people tracking other people, like having tracking devices on cars and that. So it's not unusual for us to do a scan of a vehicle to make sure that there's no tracking devices on there. But with technology, to answer your question, with technology, we've got to be up with the play with that. We've got to understand the different ways that are coming in, where people are affected by digital technology. For instance, let's just say someone who's put even a tracking device on a phone or an app on a phone to track someone, that's one of the first things that we do when someone comes into our service, is that we will go through their phone and disable all the functions on the phone, and stop the phone from being used entirely. So that's something that we do before we even, as part of the safety plan, before we even go into the details of how else we can help them in stalking, you know, with the stalking behaviour that may be going on for them at that time. But you know, honestly, it's also it's stalking is a very scary thing to happen for wahine. So you know, settling that, also they're having to deal with leaving their whānau, but also the stalking behaviour that continues even though they may have left the relationship.
To be honest, although I'm aware of a change in stalking legislation, I'm not quite sure what the changes are. Could you give us an idea of what they are in layman's terms so that those who are sort of unfamiliar with the space might be a little clearer on what this legislative change means?
So I'll just lead into that a little bit about how standalone offences, when a law gets passed, that standalone offences can, or something that used to be classed as maybe assault or something like that, or a harassment, when it becomes a standalone offence, it means that it's more effective for us to be able to track that or prove that in court, or have reasons for protection orders to be in place. And one of the major standalone offences that has affected has been good for that is the in 2018 the strangulation law was passed as a standalone offence. So whilst it took a while to embed in, the same as what will happen with this legislation here, stalking and harassment. So what the, I guess just a brief breakdown on what that law means now is that things like, for instance, someone who's recording behaviour of another person or tracking another person, trying to find where they are, their location, but then they also might use that information online to damage the other person's reputation. They might have access to, for instance, digital images, or they might have access to personal information and confidential information that about that person that may not have been, that person may not want to be public. So putting that stuff online and publicising it to other people, or publicising statements or materials about that person online, anything that kind of that's harmful for that person, but also that is I think a key thing here is that it creates fear for that person, and it doesn't. You know, we often see women who come in who have been in an abusive relationship, and that's happening for them, but stalking and harassment doesn't just happen in abuse, you know, in intimate partner violence. You know, often it is from that, but sometimes it's not as well, and that's probably due to technology now, where you could reach out through basically into the homes of people, metaphorically into the homes of people by using digital searching and research online.
Yeah. I'm assuming over the years we've come to think that many who are in refuge are our people, our wahine. How can refuges across the country and specialist services help ensure that diverse communities, and particularly wahine Māori and migrant women, benefit equally from the protections that the new law offers?
Yeah, so let's just be clear here. And again, I will use the example of the when the strangulation law came in 2018, it takes a while for it to get embedded, okay? So when we're talking about what would be, you know, how can that benefit our own people, and how can it work for our own people? Firstly, I'll just say that it will take a while for it to get bedded in, okay? So that's just the nature of new legislation to come in. Everyone has to get used to it. Our services have to get used to it. Police have to get used to it. They've got to know where they stand by using this law. But absolutely, and you're right, Dale, that in our service that women, wahine Māori are represented when coming into our service, and this is very, very unfortunate. And also, often wahine Māori who come into our service are also have been affected by a system that doesn't work for them as well. They've already coming in cautiously and putting their whole trust in a service where perhaps prior to them coming into our service, the services have not been the best for them, or have actually been a disservice for them. So when they come into, we for them, this validates though the experiences of stalking that perhaps might have become just a part of the violence that's been perpetrated against them, but perhaps it's been something that they've minimised and not realised, not minimised themselves, but they've normalised it. And often people will feel that, I'm not a family violence victim because there's no physical abuse that's associated with the violence against me, but there is all this stuff, that other stuff that's happening. Someone's following me, someone's doing stuff to me online and all of that. So often that becomes either minimised or it becomes normalised. And I think with the law coming in, and it's just the same as what happened with that strangulation legislation that came back, was that it takes a while for people to actually realise the significance of what's happening to them, because often the emotional abuse that comes with and the psychological harm that comes with stalking is just as bad as the physical abuse that happens as well. So absolutely, I would say that this will take time to work and be something that's going to improve how our wahine Māori, their experiences are validated.
Well, tēnā koe. Look, it's welcome. I'm just very mindful of the work that you and others do in these spaces, and our wahine are forced to seek tautoko in the most desperate of circumstances. So kia kaha. Mm-hmm. Just finally, what indicators will you be watching for to know whether this law is truly improving safety outcomes for the women you work with?
So we're at the grassroots here, Dale. So everyone that comes into our service, that is something that we will, is always asked anyway about, are there any stalking behaviours and what do they look like? And then also we progress them through to whatever way we can advocate for them and support them. So being a frontline agency, we will be there right at the coal front to see whether when we have to do a protection order for them, and whether that has to, and when that goes to the courts for that protection order to be in place, we're probably some of the indicators are going to be whether, when that protection order goes in, whether that gets passed, the protection order, the judge decides that the protection order is going to easily be in place because of the stalking behaviour, because often it's about the physical abuse, not this other abuse that happens. So we'll absolutely be able to see ourselves at the front line whether or not the law is going to be embedded and when that's going to and when that's going to be in a way be embedded in a way that's going to support our people.
Thank you for sharing some time with us and kōrero. It's important, and certainly in the lives of those who are seeking tautoko with the most desperate of circumstances. Annie Dupaia, the kaiwhakahaere mm-hmm. from Eastern Women's Refuge, our guest today on Atatū. Tēnā koe, and thank you for joining us, Annie.
Kia ora, ngā mihi.
Ngā mihi. Thank you. You're 603 Urban Māori Radio.